This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. said Sunday that it expects that China will retaliate with increased tariffs on U.S. exports. This after President Donald Trump sharply boosted levies on Chinese products headed to the United States. VOA's Ira Melman spoke with Philip Levy, a senior fellow at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Levy said the tariffs leave the administration in a difficult position.
It looks like the next step is for the Chinese to retaliate against the United States.
And what does that entail? Obviously, one would think that they're just going to, double what the United States has done back to the United States, right?
Well, they had tried to match the United States tariff for tariff. Of course, part of the thing with this relationship is an underlying imbalance such that they cannot stick tariffs on as many imports as the U.S. can. But there are other things they can do to make life uncomfortable for the U.S., and I expect we're going to find out what those are.
Mr. Trump on Friday more than doubled the tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods, boosting the rate from 10% to 25%. The UN said Sunday that the redeployment of Houthi forces from key ports in Yemen went in accordance with established plans. The UN is slated to verify the first phase of the Houthi troop withdrawal on Tuesday. As Reuters' Francesca Lana reports, the redeployment efforts that began Saturday are related to a deal reached in December.
Last year, the Saudi-backed government and the Iran-aligned Houthis made a pact to pull back troops from Hodeidah, a lifeline for millions of Yemenis. But the peace deal stalled for months amid deep mistrust among the parties, leaving Hodeidah port closed, blocking humanitarian aid from getting to millions of starving people.
That's Reuters' Francesca Lina. The port of Hodeidah is the entry point for 70% of the humanitarian aid and imports to Yemen. This is VOA News. More tug-of-wars expected in Washington this week. Congressional Democrats further information and material pertaining to the Russia probe. And the Trump administration is eager to turn the page and move on from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. VOA's Michael Bowman has more.
Top House Democrats have pushed back against calls for impeachment proceedings against the president, but have warned that the White House could force the issue by impeding congressional oversight going forward.
Every day they are advertising their obstruction of justice by ignoring subpoenas and by just declaring that people shouldn't come and speak to Congress so that the American people can find out the truth.
Trump says Democrats' efforts will backfire.
Now the Democrats are saying, we want more. And actually, it's working the other way, because now we have our best poll numbers that we've ever had. It's crazy.
Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
House Democrats continue to negotiate for Mueller to testify, and also the Republican-led Senate Intelligence Committee surprised many in Washington by sending a subpoena to the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., to testify as part of the panel's own probe of Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Steve-O Penderowski has been inaugurated as the new president of North Macedonia, calling for reconciliation in a deeply divided society. The new president took the oath before parliament on Sunday, then promised in his inauguration speech that he will serve all citizens. He added that it's time to heal open wounds from the recent past and to really start civil reconciliation. The swearing-in ceremony was attended by presidents of Albania, Bulgaria, Serbia, and Kosovo. Gunmen killed six people attending mass at the Catholic Church of Dablo in North Burkina Faso Sunday morning. A witness told VOA Africa the priest and five churchgoers were among the victims. The Roman Catholic faithful in Sri Lanka's capital attended mass Sunday for the first time since the Easter bombings of churches and hotels that killed more than 250 people. Churchgoer Dami Fonseca speaking after mass.
Even though we have been through tough times, we are stronger than that, that will rise up through challenges, through love, kindness, and forgiveness. And that is exactly what God has taught us.
Soldiers and police armed with rifles patrolled the neighborhood around the churches 2 days after the Easter attacks. The Islamic State did claim responsibility for the attacks. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 13th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon separatists demand direct negotiations with President Paul Biya, not mediated dialogue.
If there should be any mediator, it should be appointed by the United Nations or maybe the European Union or the USA. This is the only form of mediation or mediator that we are looking up to.
Chris Anu is a spokesman for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia. An analyst sees South Africa's May 8th election results as a reprimand for the ruling ANC. A Zimbabwe government-funded audit reveals irregularities in the redistribution of land seized from white commercial farmers. And Liberian President George Weah wants to meet tomorrow, Tuesday, with June 7th protest organizers, but they have some conditions.
Number one, and most important, is that we want to have the media present to cover the program live, because we don't want to give rise to malicious rumors being spread, including at the level of the Minister of Information.
Henry Costa is one of the spokespersons of the Council of Patriots in Liberia, and East African countries are warned of an imminent risk of debt distress. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesperson for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonia Republic says the group does not want dialogue with the Yaounde government, but rather direct negotiations between what he calls French Cameroon and Ambazonia. Chris Anu says such negotiation must be facilitated by either the United States, United Nations, or the European Union. This comes after Ni John Frundi, president of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party, put forward over the weekend what he called solutions to resolving Cameroon's armed conflict. Frundi called for immediate ceasefire, release of prisoners, and appointment of a mediator. Separatist spokesperson Anu says Mr. Frundi has no integrity to negotiate on behalf of Ambazonians.
We will not support any form of mediation coming from the SDF chairman, John Frondi, because he himself is not qualified to carry out any form of mediation. Frondi has no integrity to be negotiating for Ambazonians. If there is anything Frondi should be doing, he should be withdrawing his parliamentarians and senators from French Cameroon to come back to Ambazonia or the Southern Cameroons to be part and parcel of this struggle.
But Chris, Mr. Frundi was responding to the Cameroon Prime Minister, who was visiting the Northwest region, sent there by President Paul Biya, who has offered to say that he's ready for a formal dialogue with anybody.
Well, in our vocabulary, we're not looking for dialogue. We are looking for negotiations. For us, this is a war, and dialogue does not end a war. Rather, negotiations end a war. There is only one form of negotiation we are looking for, a negotiation where French Cameroon representatives and the Southern Cameroon's Ambazonia representatives sit on table and discuss issues that concern the two. In this conflict, there are only two sides, Ambazonian Southern Cameroon side and the French Cameroon side.
Chris, I'm looking at the three conditions that Mr. Frundi put forward: immediate ceasefire, release of prisoners, and appointment of a mediator. If I'm not mistaken, in one of my discussions with you, you wanted the release of your leaders. Doesn't this come closer to some of your demands?
It does, to an extent. Release all the prisoners, that is good. Pull out French Cameroon troops from our territory, that is good. But appointing mediators, French Cameroon to appoint mediators, to mediate with who? That is, again, another non-starter. Any mediator must come from either the USA or the European Union, failing which we will not sit on any negotiation table with a mediator that is appointed by French Cameroon. We are going to any negotiation table as two equal partners. We are going to that table as a sovereign nation that gains its independence in October 1961. And French Cameroon will go to that table as a sovereign nation that gained its independence in 1960. And so if there should be any mediator, it should be appointed by the United Nations or maybe the European Union or the USA. This is the only form of mediation or mediator that we are looking up to.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. A spokesman for the upcoming June 7th anti-government protest in Liberia says the organizers will inform President George Weah today, Monday, that they will meet with the president tomorrow on Tuesday. The president sent a letter last Thursday to the Council of Patriots requesting to meet with them tomorrow on Tuesday to listen to their concerns and hold discussions on the way forward. Organizers have dubbed the June 7 protest Save the State protest. They say they are concerned about what they called the country's worsening economic situation and corruption. Henry Costa is one of the spokespersons of the Council of Patriots. He says the group will meet with the president, but with conditions.
We've received a communication from the president asking us to meet him on May the 14th, Unification Day. We've discussed it among ourselves as the governing council of the Council of Patriots, and we've decided that we're going to meet the president, but with certain preconditions. Number one, and most important, is that we want to have the media present to cover the program live, because we don't want to give rise to malicious rumors being spread not by low-level elements of the government or their party, but including at the level of the Minister of Information. On Thursday of last week, at the ministry's regular press briefing, the minister, Eugene Nangwe himself, said some of the opposition people are seeking jobs and money from the president. That's why they are doing the protest, and that's why they criticize. These are reprehensible statements coming from people who claim they want to meet. So it's not conciliatory. So we want the media present. We will communicate with the president tomorrow in writing, conveying to him our acceptance to meet, but with one key precondition, that the media be present to cover the program or the meeting live.
But why set that condition when it is the president that has invited you?
It is the same president whose senior officials spread malicious lies and rumors. So we do not trust that we would go to that meeting and leave it with the people on the side of the president behaving in a responsible and decent way, Mr. Bott. They are very irresponsible. They spread rumors. They say it publicly, in fact. So we don't want to go to the president in one back room the moment we leave the meeting, and then the next thing you know, and the president does not punish his people, Mr. Bott. He does not punish them when they say these things.
What do you understand, Mr. Costa, to be the purpose of this meeting? Because according to the letter from the president's office, the intent of this meeting is for the government to listen to your concerns and to hold discussions to derive a way forward for the betterment of our country. What does your group understand to be the purpose?
Well, the president wants to dialogue, and we want to protest. We want to exercise our constitutional right to protest. We're not prepared to sit in that meeting with the president to dialogue. We are prepared to go there to the president and to tell him why we want to do the protest. That's it. We have grievances. We've been speaking about these grievances collectively and individually for the last 14 months, Mr. Bote. We've been ignored in our own country. It hurts, Mr. Bote, to be ignored. That the only way you can draw the president's attention is to talk about a protest, Mr. Bote.
I'd like for you to clarify if anyone in the government has offered any of you in the leadership of this Council of Patriots money to persuade you not to have this protest.
Well, some of us individually have been receiving calls from people within the system. Of course, you know that. This is Liberia. This is how it works. They're going to be trying to dissuade you. But I do not know of anyone who's been offered money as yet. But yes, there are efforts. I mean, on the part of several individuals in the government or connected to the government who are trying to see whether they can sway people away from this effort. But we want the media present because we don't trust that the government would behave in a decent way.
Mr. Costa, thank you. It's always nice to speak with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bolton.
Henry Costa is one of the spokespersons of the Council of Patriots of Liberia, organizers of the June 7 protest. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Delaware. Today is Monday, May 13th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said Sunday that he and the ruling African National Congress, ANC, have learned their lesson from the results of the May 8th election. The ANC won the vote by 57%, a lower margin than previous elections. President Ramaphosa said the people said they want jobs and an end to corruption, and that the ANC will do just that. Colette Scholz-Herzenberg is one of the political science, is a member of the political science department at the University of Stellenbosch. She says the outcome of the election was a reprimand for the ANC. But she also says the victory, though not as large as in previous elections, will give President Ramaphosa the legitimacy and credibility he needs to put in place a reformist agenda that South Africa so critically needs.
The first is that the ANC basically received a significant reprimand from the South African electorate. It did poorly compared to previous elections. It reached just over 57%. The ANC has always moved between 62 and 70%. So this is, in a sense, a resounding loss for the ANC. Although they win the national election, all 8 of the 9 provinces, the ANC will regard this as a significant reprimand. And this is, really reflective of the last 10 years of governance in South Africa. You know, the electorate went to the polls with a clear message for the ANC. And we see it not just in the actual results, but also in terms of the turnout. Turnout declined in this country quite significantly in this election. And it indicates that voters were unwilling to put their mark behind the ANC. They were equally unwilling to support an opposition party, and there was just a general sense of disillusionment. And the ANC will be reflecting on this, and I think Cyril Ramaphosa has been waiting for the election to conclude before he can begin to really push his reformist agenda, which is significant for both the party and the country. On the other hand, and perhaps on a more positive note, the 57.5% also gives Cyril Ramaphosa precisely what he needed, a victory that will offer him an opportunity and sufficient legitimacy and credibility to push exactly this reformist agenda that the country needs.
I have been reading the papers and editorials and opinions, one saying, for example, the ANC must adapt or die, or one more chance to do good for the people of South Africa. Where does President Ramaphosa start?
That's going to be the challenge for Ramaphosa. I think what he needs to do is get the public back on his side. So the first thing he will need to do is, through the National Prosecuting Authority, through the criminal justice system, a second motion, certainly give permission to the criminal justice system to begin to seek some sort of a justice, really. And that would include then looking at high-profile prosecutions, people, fairly senior people, figures in the ANC, who will be looking to be prosecuted by the state. I think this will instill a great deal of confidence amongst the general public, and that will then allow him to just delve deeper into the party to begin to root out corruption, which is very manifest, not only nationally, but at the local level. And I think that's going to be far more challenging.
Do you think there are people within the ANC that are still might resist any changes coming?
There are interests within the ANC who will be resistant to this, simply because many people face prosecution. So at the end of the day, we can certainly expect pockets of resistance in the organization, and how that manifests remains to be seen.
Dr. Scholz-Herzenberg, thank you very much. We're so happy to speak with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much for having me.
Colette Scholz-Herzenberg is with the Political Science Department of the University of Stellenbosch. She was speaking with me from Cape Town. A Zimbabwe government-funded audit has revealed serious irregularities in the redistribution of land seized from white commercial farmers in 2000 and parceled out to indigenous people, some with no knowledge of taking care of productive farms. According to the state-controlled Sunday Mail newspaper, the National Agricultural Land Audit was conducted in the country's 10 districts and 10 provinces between October and November last year. It revealed that some farmers sold their farms and others leased them without government approval. Agricultural expert Nandla Nkomo says the audit may result in the transformation of Zimbabwe's land reform policy.
I'm actually glad that, for the first time, we actually have maybe a document or a piece of paper that confirms in writing what all of us have known intuitively. And I think it's up to us how we use this, but I think it creates a great opportunity for us to start to address the fundamental issues of moving our agriculture forward. So I'm very positive and excited that we finally have a report, but I think I'm more concerned about what do we do next now that this report is out.
What should be done next, Mr. Ngoma?
Well, for starters, I think, you know, a land audit is about two things. On the one side, you want to have a comprehensive database of all the land holdings in the country, their status in terms of, you know, current operations, potential operations that could take place there. That's number one. On the other side, agriculture is about personnel. Who's sitting on that land? What assets do they have and what is their capability? And then on the basis of that, we then need to have an enlightened approach that will then match the land to the right sort of people and make sure that whether it's 1 acre, whether it's 100 acres or it's 1,000 acres, it's sitting in the hands of people that actually have got the capacity and the wherewithal to make the investment and to move the country's agriculture forward. I think this is an urgent matter which cannot continue to be pushed aside.
Do you see the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa taking action on this report?
Well, look, my assumption is that this is their report. They commissioned it, and I'm assuming that the reason why they commissioned it is because they wanted to do something about it. But be that as it may, I think the time has come for us as citizens to start to hold our government accountable and move them in the direction where we want to go. There's enough organized agricultural formations, civil society groups that can now step up and say, okay, this is how we can move this forward. NGOs also have the capacity to mobilize funding to make sure that a better plan is put in place on how to resolve this. Government alone will not be able to do much about this, but I think the rest of our citizens can move this agenda in the right direction.
Matla Nkomo is an agricultural expert. He was speaking from Amsterdam with the Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service. The African Forum and Network on Debt and Development has warned East African countries of the imminent risk of debt distress if no action is taken. This comes as the total regional debt shows an incremental trend from $16 billion in 2010 to $45 billion in 2017. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
Public debt in East African countries has been on upward trajectory in the last decade. At the beginning of the current millennium, East African community countries had a very high debt, with member states except Kenya were classified as heavily indebted poor countries. Fanuel Kenala Bokosi is the executive director of African Forum and Network on Debt and Development, a pan-African organization working on debt management in the continent.
The interest rates that were lower now because of the recovery of the global financial market are getting higher. We now have China, the emerging economies, who are giving loans under a different way of doing business.
Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania, and Uganda are the East African community countries that have received the full amount of debt relief for which they are eligible and under heavily indebted poor countries initiative. Hebron Timothy Mahagenda is the executive director of Tanzania Coalition on Debt and Development.
We have borrowed a lot. By December 2018, we had a debt stock of 61.8 trillion. Looking at the figure and the speed and the appetite of the government to borrow, sooner or later we are almost getting into the debt trap.
In 2010, Burundi was indebted with $382 million, and by 2017, the figures hiked to $425 million. Kenya is now the most indebted country in the East African community, from $6 billion in 2010 to $22 billion in 2017. Julius Maganda is a Ugandan East African community minister.
Some of these loans, they are negotiated by some particular people. So their percentages in terms of commissions is so high. They even give conditions of being the contractors. They must get a contractor from the same country that has given the loan.
Matthias Kasamba is a member of the East African Legislative Assembly.
Borrowing is not bad at all, and being in debt is not bad at all. But how do you use what you've borrowed, and how efficient are you utilizing to make impactful transformation of the people you are borrowing on their behalf? Because we are doing this in trusteeship You cannot put all the money on the roads and you don't support agriculture, the productive sector, where you empower the majority of the people.
Burundi and South Sudan are the two East African countries who are at a very high risk of debt distress and declared incapable of paying the public debt and external debt, while Uganda is the only country in the East African community with no risk of debt distress. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Cairo, which is set to host the 2019 CAF Organized African Cup of Nations. The 24 teams that have qualified for the championship have stepped up their preparations for Africa's biggest football showpiece. Cameroon coach Clarence Seedorf named a preliminary 34-man squad for the 2019 African Cup of Nations. The defending AFCON champions will face Ghana, Benin Republic and Guinea-Bissau in Group F at the finals in Egypt. The Indomitable Lions will be chasing their sixth continental crown. Elsewhere, Football Kenya Federation has also revealed that it has secured two friendly matches for the senior national team, the Harambee Stars. The Harambee Stars will camp in France ahead of the championship, while Nigeria will be playing in their First Nations Cup since winning the tournament on South African soil in 2013, have already organized warm-up matches against Zimbabwe and Senegal. Away from the Nations Cup preparations, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa successfully defended their premiership title after claiming a 1-0 win over Free State Stars to be crowned the 2018-2019 premiership champions in South Africa. The Brazilians finished on 59 points, 2 points above second place Orlando Pirates. Staying with football news, former Manchester City and Barcelona midfielder Yaya Toure says he's still in contention to play for a few more years, despite his agent announcing his apparent retirement last week. The 35-year-old has not played since having his contract at the Greek side Olympiacos terminated in December 2018. On Friday, Yaya Toure's agent Dimitri Silok said he had decided to end his career as a champion. In athletics news, few African countries got to the podium as the IWF World Relays Yokohama 2019 ended before a crowd of more than 20,000 at the Yokohama International Stadium on Sunday. South Africa men's 4x200 team earned the country's first ever medal at the IWF World Relays, winning silver in 1 minute 20.42 seconds, breaking the African record which had been set by the same squad in the heats. Kenyan sprinters could only salvage a bronze medal on the final day of the competition. And finally, Egypt's Ahmed Adli and Uganda's Ivy Amoko have booked their tickets to the Chess World Cup 2019, slated for September in Russia. The both snatched the gold medal at the Africa Zone 4.2 Individual Chess Championship, which was concluded in Kenya's Mombasa at the weekend. Ivy Amoko came first in the women's competition, while Egypt's Ala Matez and Sahila Abdel Monim took the second and third place, respectively, with 6.5 points. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, May 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.